Okay,
so welcome to this seminar by George Barnatan. So he agreed to give a talk on a very short notice, and here is the title on the screen.
So, I forgot to distribute the handout. It being a short notice means that the handout is the one that I will be using in Zurich. So I need the leftovers as well.
Okay. So do you want to collect them at the end?
No. I only want the leftovers to use in Zurich. Okay. So I will be talking about two things. Okay. Or rather, my talk is there will be a talk and a meta talk. So the talk is about balloons and hoops. So. Noting of two-dimensional and one-dimensional thing in four dimensions and a certain invariant thereof that is valued in trees and wheels. And the meta subject is that I really want to initiate a conversation with Anton and Pavel and maybe other people, and so I sort of want to have the language. I want to say a few things that I will later be able to refer to when I talk with these people. But anyway, let me start. So as I said, the talk will follow a handout, and here it is in front of you. And I want to start with a few highlights. I'm going to construct an invariant zeta, and I'm going to claim, or at least conjecture, that this invariant is a complete evaluation of the BF TQFT in four dimensions as described by Cataneo and Rossi. Another thing is that the invariant is completely computable. So I'm going to tell you that it's completely computable and how to compute it. So, when I say computable, I really, really mean computable. So if you start from the Borromean tangle, this is the value of the invariant. The invariant is valued in linear combination of trees and wheels, and these are the linear combinations that you get, cropped at a certain degree, but it's in principle computable. And lastly, still in the highlights, not yet the actual talk, so a certain reduction of the invariant, if you kill a huge part of it and you're left with almost the minimal things that still keeps it interesting, what you're left with is a version of the Alexander polynomial, except it's way better than the standard Alexander polynomial. So it's manifestly polynomial time and size extension of the Alexander polynomial to tangles. Now, what it means is that, so you see, one difficulty with the Alexander polynomial is that when you try to evaluate it, there is a black box at the end. You form a matrix in a reasonable way, and then you have to take its determinant, and this determinant is a black box. So, for example, it can be defined using an exponential number of operations, and then it's a beautiful definition. Or it can be computed using Gaussian elimination, row reduction, whatever, and then it sort of, you lose the meaning of the determinant as you do the computation. So this is particularly bad if you try to categorify it. But the point of the invariant that I will describe is that it breaks the computation into many steps, basically stepping stones across this sort of dark river of determinants. So it breaks the computation into many steps, each of which is simpler, and each of which is, and so that at each of which you're actually computing the invariant of something. The something being a tangle, which is a part of the knot. So when you have a big knot, you can always assemble it by gluing more and more and more crossings. And then having an invariant for the intermediate thing is a useful thing. Let me start. So the structure of my talk will be, I will be talking for 15 generalized minutes about topology. I guess it's American minutes, which are worth 1.609 European minutes. So I will be talking about for 15 minutes about topology, and I will tell you that there is a certain collection of topological objects with certain operations on them. Then I will be talking for 15 generalized minutes about algebra, and it will be the same kind of, there will be again a certain collection of algebraic objects with a corresponding collection of operations, and then I will tell you, okay, it's very easy to construct a morphism between this and that, and then that morphism is my invariant, and I will at the end say a few more things about it. But let me start with topology. So the topology I care about is the topology of ribbon knotted balloons and hoops. And the word ribbon I will say nothing about, and I'm not 100% sure if it's necessary or not. Okay? So, but I will say something about knotted balloons and hoops. So what are knotted balloons and hoops? Well, balloons are two-dimensional spheres. They're labeled by some labeling set T, and the labels are called U, V, W, things like that. They are oriented and they are connected by a string to a base point, which I will often call infinity. Hoops are one-dimensional circles. They are labeled by some set which I will usually call H, and the elements will be called X, Y, Z, etc. And again, they are connected by a string to some point, to the same base point as before. And when I say knotted, I mean that you embed these things into R4 or S4, which is the same. Often I will embed the base point at infinity, and you will see what it looks like in a minute. And I regard these embeddings modulo isotropy, essentially modulo deformations. So I'm looking at two-dimensional things and one-dimensional things knotted together in R4. Somebody once asked me, why restrict to these things? Okay, why just balloons and hoops? Okay, and rather than answering, I want to ask you a riddle. The answer is in the answer to the riddle. So people often study pi 1 and pi 2 of a topological space, meaning homotopy classes of maps from S1 to X and homotopy classes of maps from S2 to X. But they never study pi t of X, which is homotopy classes of a tube into X. Here's a picture of a tube, just so that it's clear. And when I talk about homotopy classes of maps, I mean you map the tube to the space so that the top rim and the bottom rim gets mapped to the base point. And it's again a group, because if you have two tubes in a space, you can just compose them, put them one on top of each other in the usual way. Okay? So you get another group called pi t of x. Why doesn't anybody study it? Okay? So the answer is, the answer which, and you have to work out the details, but the answer is that all the information in pi t of x is already in pi 1 and pi 2. So there's no need to study pi t, and similarly, the things that I study in R4 are sufficient. You can recover almost everything you want from those. Okay, examples. So let's start with two silly examples. So epsilon x is the balloons and hoops in which there are no balloons, in which the set of balloons is empty, and there is only one hoop labeled x, and it's a straight line going from minus infinity to infinity. It's the unknotted, it's just the unknotted S1 in R4. Okay? Second silly example, well, I have to tell you how to interpret the second silly example, epsilon u, the sort of unknotted balloon. So I write it as a tennis racket, right? But, or maybe ping pong racket. But if you want to interpret it in R4, you have to do the following. First of all, interpret this picture as lying in R3, right? It's drawn in perspective, so it's somehow lying in R3, okay? And then take the surface, the membrane of the tennis racket, and make two copies of it, both attached to the rim, and take one copy and push it up in R4, so along the t-coordinate, and another copy and push it down in R4, along the t-coordinate, and then the two copies are glued along the rim, so you get a balloon. Well, actually, here's the picture of the balloon, right? The fourth coordinate, the coordinate in which I blew things up is the time coordinate, the t-coordinate, okay? And, well, it was a lovely story, but it's unfortunately still a boring knot, right? It's just the unknotted balloon, okay? But here are the next two examples. So rho plus of U and X, it's a KBH with one balloon and one hoop. The hoop is just a straight line. The balloon is as before. If you look at this picture at R3, in R3, you think that there is a singularity here because the hoop meets the tennis racket, the membrane of the tennis racket. But remember that the membrane of the tennis racket was split in two and pushed up and down. So in fact, on the tennis racket, the t coordinates here is different than the t coordinate for the blue. The blue stays in the base copy of R3, t equals 0. So in fact, this is non-singular, and in fact, it's knotted, and it's sort of the four-dimensional analog, or a four-dimensional analog, of the Hopf link. Well, this is the Hopf link with linking number plus. There is likewise a Hopf link with linking number minus. The only difference is that sort of the hoop penetrates the tennis racket from a different direction here relative to here. There is a sign rule involving your right hand or something, but you don't want to know what it is. Okay? Let's go to a more sophisticated example. So here's a complicated KBH with two hoops. One hoop starts here, goes da 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 all the way around, and ends here, meaning it goes from infinity to infinity. Another hoop starts here, goes all the way to here, again from infinity to infinity. And likewise, there are two balloons. One balloon is attached to infinity via a string here, and otherwise it loops around this way. The other balloon is a bit smaller. And how do we interpret this picture? We interpret it as before. So the hoops stay in R3 at t equals 0. The balloons are drawn as, well, topological tennis rackets, and you should take each tennis racket, double the membrane, push part of it up, part of it down, while keeping the rim. So if you look at it, you see, I guess there are a few features that I want to highlight, okay? So first of all, here I didn't bother to tell you whether the hoop goes above itself or under itself, and the answer is that it doesn't matter because we are in R4. In R4, over is equal to under. So in fact, one-dimensional things on their own cannot be knotted in R4, but in the presence of two-dimensional things, they can be knotted. Likewise, here, well, this is a tube, a thin tube, right? When you thicken it, it becomes a thin tube, and behind it, there is a blue strand. Does it matter if it's behind or above? The answer, it doesn't matter for the same reason as before. Why did I draw it behind rather than above? I don't know. I just felt like it. Okay? However, this is a genuine knotting. Likewise, over here, there is a genuine knotting of the with itself, of one balloon with itself. The way you should interpret it, remember that this get thickened in R4, this get thickened in R4, but this part of the tennis racket was wider, so it gets pushed further away in R4. Let's pretend that when I push stuff up and down in R4, I push it to a distance which is proportional to the distance from the ring. So over here, both the slash and the backslash gets pushed to R4, but the backslash gets pushed more, so it's not singular. Okay? Are there any other features that I want to emphasize? Yeah, one more. Actually, here I could take this part of the balloon and pull it out, right? I can isotope it out of this wide backslash part of the other balloon. Okay, so this KBH could be simplified. On the other hand, other parts cannot be naively simplified, right? Here you cannot.
I have one small question. If I go to that crossing of the balloon with the balloon and take its mirror image, is that still the same thing or is that actually a different crossing?
It's a different crossing.
I see.
So in fact, it's the switch from rho plus to rho minus, essentially.
Oh.
Though the word mirror image is a bit loaded.
I shouldn't have said that.
Because in R4, because there are several...
I didn't mean that, I just meant R2 mirror image.
I think I understood you, but there are actually several mirror images that mean different things. Okay, now, one more thing. This KBH is in fact in the image of a map delta whose domain is ordinary tangles. So what's an ordinary tangle? It's a piece of a knot drawn in a plane. Usually it's drawn inside the disk. Here I didn't bother to indicate the disk, but pretend that this is surrounded by a disk. Okay? And I think it's completely clear what the map does. Basically, it maps the tails of the components of the tangle to local configurations that look like this, a cap and the line going to infinity, the heads to a cap with a string going to infinity and another string going to infinity. Along the rest, you get a doubling, so every purple strand of an ordinary tangle becomes a pair of a tube and a line, and the picture indicates what you should do near crossings, what crossings go to. Okay? So this is a map that maps ordinary tangles, and in particular ordinary knots, into KBHs in 4D. So anything I will talk about will include ordinary knot theory. Okay? It will include ordinary knot theory, but it will be slightly different. So you see, you can think of it as being the original knot and its shadow, okay? And the difference is that I allow the shadow to take a different, to be separate from the object. So like Peter Pan, who's fighting with his own shadow, okay? And in fact, this will allow me to make some computations will become easier due to that. And I should say that this map delta is due to Shin Sato, who is pictured. Are you still with me?
Yeah. And this, the way that you shift the balloon off the hoop, reflecting the framing of the tangle?
No, it's actually, we're in 4D, it doesn't matter.
There's no framing.
Yeah. Okay. No, their framings do enter the business,
yes.
But not here.
Not yet.
Okay. Sorry, okay, now a little bit more on delta. So I just told you what delta does locally near crossings, but I should have told you, or I will tell you right now, that delta can be extended to so-called virtual knots. So a virtual knot is a knot or a tangle, sort of like the ordinary ones that are drawn in the plane with two types of crossing over another, but with an additional crossing, the so-called virtual crossing, whose sense is unspecified. It is not specified whether it's over and under or under. Okay? And then virtual crossings get mapped by delta to configurations like this, where the two tubes, right, each strand becomes a pair of a tube and a strand, and the strands, it never mattered which one was over and which one was under, but the tubes, if you, you know, rather than having them penetrate each other, if you just have them go one above each other, then in R4 it doesn't matter which one is up and which one is down. So for this type of crossings, I don't need to specify the sense of the crossing. And then the claim is that delta, well, so far I've defined it on not diagrams, okay? But the claim is that it satisfies the usual Rademeister moves of ordinary knot theory, and likewise virtual Rademeister moves, which are exactly the same as the usual Rademeister moves, except they involve the virtual crossing. It satisfies the so-called Dittur move. I don't think it matters right now what it is. And finally, it satisfies the overcrossings commute relations, which says that if you have a virtual tangle with a virtual crossing here and two ordinary crossings above it, then and the strand that connects these two ordinary crossings goes over the other two strands, hence overcrossing commute, then you can slide that strand to the other side of the virtual crossing. What's the topology that this represents? So the topology is, well, you see, well, let me ignore the yellow, the blue parts. The blue parts are somehow easily work themselves out. So let me just tell you about what happens to the pink parts after you map, you apply delta. So after you apply delta, this becomes a thick tube, and these two become thin tubes, and here there is a virtual crossing between them, so this is the picture that you get. And clearly you can slide to the other side. However, undercrossings commute, if that strand was below rather than above, does not hold. Because if that strand here was the thin strand, and you try to slide it to the other side of a virtual crossing, well, you can, I think, try to do it in your mind, it gets twisted when it comes out on the other side. So really, delta maps a certain extension of ordinary knots, but then bought out by some relations into fourth space. And then the claim is that, well, several claims. Delta actually injects ordinary knots, usual knots, into knotted balloons and hoops. And likely also it injects tangles, but I haven't verified it. It maps, conjecturally, this describes all of the kernel of delta, but I don't know it to be true. It's an open problem still. And finally, if you allow punctures and cuts, so what are punctures and cuts? If you puncture a balloon, it disappears. It pops and disappears. If you cut a hoop, then it's sort of topologically trivial, so it disappears too. So basically, if you allow dropping components, delta is onto. So if you want, if you have an arbitrary KBH, it is in the image of this generalized delta, or at least after you allow yourself to drop a few components. Okay? Okay. So, are you still with me?
But isn't every one of these guys empty after you drop several components? I'm a bit confused.
I mean, after you drop several components, it's empty. But, you know, if I wanted to get an arbitrary KBH with three balloons and three hoops, I might have to start with a tangle with 50.
You drop hoops from the tangle down to the one you're interested in, not the other.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's understood.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. So, you know, if I want to get just to complete you know, if I want to get an arbitrary KDH with three balloons and three hoops, I might have to start with a purple tango like this one, except having 50 components. Then applying delta, I'll get something with 50 balloons and 50 hoops, and I'll have to drop. And after dropping 47 of them, I'll get the one I wanted. I'm not showing the proof. I'm only claiming it. Okay. Good. Now, you know, here's an ideological point. Knots are not the right object to study in knot theory. I've said it, people have heard me say it before. You see, knots are like the wrapped candies. They're candies, they're beautiful, but they're already made. You know, you want to study the ingredients from which they are made. And even before you can speak about the ingredients, you have to talk about the operations that allow you to mix these ingredients and make the complete thing. Basically, everything I told you about KDHs is not interesting. It becomes much more interesting once I tell you which operations exist on KDHs. Okay? So, well, two operations I already described, punctures and cuts. You can always drop a component, be it a balloon or a hoop. There is a binary operation called connected sum. So, if you have one KDH, this could be knotted, I just didn't draw it knotted. And another KDH, you can sort of merge them, you can connect their base points and get a bigger KDH. These are sort of the obvious operations, but then comes the interesting operations. So, in general, if X is a topological space and pi 1 of X is a group, pi 2 of X is an abelian group, and pi 1 acts on pi 2. Now, the thing I'm talking about is not pi 1 and pi 2, because I'm talking about embeddings, not maps, and the relation is isotopy, not homotopy. But still there is a remnant of this group, and the action.
There's more than that, though, in homotopy theory.
Yes.
The Plesnikov invariant.
Well, okay.
Is there any remnant of that?
We have to talk.
All right.
What are the remnants? So, given a KBH, well, I chose it to have labels U, V, X, and Y, but you know, it could have many components, and I drew it as if it's not knotted, but I really mean that it's knotted. It's just harder to draw it knotted. So, here are three operations you can do to it. One operation is the hoop multiply or the head multiply. I often call hoops and heads for me are the same. And by the way, balloons and tails are the same for reasons to become clearer later. But anyway, there is the operation K. Well, you can apply the operation head multiply of the component X and Y, calling the output Z. And the operation, what it does is essentially like multiplication in pi 1. So the components x and y disappear, and they get replaced by a single hoop, z, that traces whatever x used to do, then goes back to the base points and traces whatever y used to do. So that's the picture. But again, everything could have been knotted. And by the way, I use double slash to indicate a function acting on the right, and later I will also use it for composition going the right way. So you know, composition is sort of confusing because you write from left to right, but you have to read it the other way somehow. So this is composition done the right way. You first do this, then you do this. Okay? Anyway, also I should emphasize that, you know, in group theory, multiplication in pi 1 is a binary operation. For me, it's a unary operation. It takes a single input, a single KBHSM input, and produces a single output. But again, it's a unary operation starting from the space of KBHs with at least two hoops and ending in the space of KBHs with one less hoop and different labels. Are you okay? So again, it's unary, not binary. Likewise, there is the analogous thing to multiplication in pi 2. So if you have two balloons, U and V, you can apply tail multiply of U and V with output label W, and the result will be, well, you basically connect the two balloons using tubes that run along their strings, and what you get, well, this is still topologically a sphere, so this is just a bigger balloon, and this is the precise analog of multiplication in pi 2. And finally, there is the analog of the action of pi 1 and pi 2. So again, I start from the same KBH, and I tell you what is the tail by head action of the tail U acted on by the head X, so the balloon U acted on by the head X. So you take the balloon U and you re-thread its string along the hoop X. You basically pull its string along the hoop X. Okay? So that produces a new KBH. This is, by the way, the operation that you do to balloons before you hand them to your kids, right? It's precisely this. You tie the string. You tie the nozzle, whatever it's called. Okay? Not nozzle. It has a better name. I forgot.
Neck.
Thank you. Okay. Now, there are properties. So these operations satisfy some relations. So first of all, there is associativities. So if M is either tail multiply or head multiply, then multiplying A and B, calling the output A, and then multiplying A and C, calling the output A, is the same as multiplying B and C, calling the answer B, and then multiplying A and B, calling the answer A. Both, in both cases, you will be multiplying A, B, and C, and at the end, call the answer A. So this is the analog of associativity in ordinary group theory. Except associativity in ordinary group theory is an axiom that takes three inputs and then asserts a certain equality about them. And this is now a unary property. It takes a single KBH as an input, the same single KBH on both sides, and you do two different sequences of operations to it, and you get the same answer. Are you okay? Likewise, there is a unary analog to the group action axioms. So when a group acts on another group, there are two main axioms. I'm ignoring identities, inverses, and sort of silly things. But the two main axioms are that when an element acts on a product, it's the same as acting on the first, acting on the second, and then multiplying. And likewise, when you act on an element by a product, it's like acting by X and then acting by Y. The analog of that in KBH language will be that when you multiply U and V, put the output in W, and then act on W by X, it's the same as acting on U by X and acting on V by X, and then multiplying. Okay? And likewise, there is a unary reformulation of the second action axiom. Okay? Now, this is not a pair of groups with a group action, but it's a meta version of this. Okay? So, it's like it, but everything got replaced by unary. So, an algebraic structure with these red operations as written here, satisfying the blue axioms as written here, plus a little bit of further junk about identities, whatever, will be called a metagroup action. So it's like a group action, but it's not a group action. Okay? Good. One more word before I go, before I finish the 15 minutes and go on to algebra. So, I claim that using these operations that I've just described, you can describe tangle concatenations, which are operations that occur in tangle theory. So, you know, if you have a tangle, or maybe strand, if you have a tangle in ordinary knot theory, then one operation which you might want to do is to take two components and concatenate them. So now you have a tangle with one component less. And in fact, this is somehow the fundamental operation in tangle theory. Because this and disjoint union. Because, you know, if you want to make a big knot out of small parts, well, what you do is you draw the small parts, you take their disjoint union, which corresponds to the binary operations that I had in KBHS, and then you just do concatenations. So, if I know how to implement concatenations of tangles, strand concatenations in tangles, using my operations, then it means that I really understand tangles, that my operations are sufficient to understand tangles. And that's the claim stated here. So the claim is that the concatenation of two strands is like the semi-direct product in this meta group action. So let me be more specific. So suppose you have a tangle. So this whole picture here represents a single tangle that has two strands, A and B, and they could be knotted with each other. This one could have a part that goes around that one, okay? So it could be knotted with that one, I'm just not drawing it. I'm not bothering to draw it. There are two things you could do. You could first of all concatenate these two strands, and then you get one long strand C, which again could be knotted. And in fact, there could be more components here and here, I just don't bother to draw it. So that's one thing that you could do. And then you could apply delta to that, and you'll get a KBH. Again, schematically, this is the picture, but really things could be knotted. Or alternatively, you could have applied delta before, so A will become a balloon hoop pair, and B will become a balloon hoop pair. And then I claim that there is a certain operation that goes from here to here, completing this to be a commutative square. The operation is essentially pi 1 semi-direct product pi 2. So first of all, you let the pi 1 part act on the pi 2 part, then you multiply in pi 1, then in pi 2, then you multiply in pi 1. Okay? But in the presence of this, it means that if I have a well-behaved invariant, which is well-behaved under these operations, composing it with delta, I will get a well-behaved operation invariant, which is well-behaved under the operations on tangles. So that would be extremely useful. The next slide, I'm not really showing you. Okay? So, what I'm not really saying is that finite type invariants, whatever these are, make sense in the usual way. So you can look at differences and do the usual game of finite type theory. And when you play the usual game of finding what core diagrams are, and in that case it will be or arrow diagrams, and you find that what you get is a certain bi-algebra, you restrict your attention to the primitive, blah, 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 blah. what you get at the end is the theory, is the story that I will tell you next. This is the 15 minutes on algebra. Okay? But I'm not doing this derivation. I'm only telling you that parallel to the topology story, there is an algebra story, and later I will say that there is a homomorphism between them. Is it still okay? Are you with me? Okay. So let me start with my algebra. So I actually do the algebra in two rounds, easy and then hard. So let's start with easy. Okay? So let T be a finite set of tail labels, these correspond to the balloons, and H a finite set of head labels, these correspond to the hoops, and I will describe a space M1/2 of T and H. M1/2 means M is because that's the letter I chose, and M1/2 means that's half the work. The other half will come later. Okay? So and this will be sort of the target space for the invariant of KBHs that I will construct. So M1/2 of T and H is simply the freely algebra on generators T raised to the power H. Or in other words, sequences of elements in the freely algebra where the elements of the sequence are indexed by the H's, by the hoops. So basically for each hoop, an element of the freely algebra generated by the balloons, or by the labels of the balloons. And to be clear, I really mean the degree completed freely algebra. So the freely algebra on a set of generators, all of them are taken to be of degree 1, is a graded object, and I'm allowing infinite sums, if the degree is increasing. Okay?
So all the coefficients you've written are rational numbers. Are you thinking of the algebras over the rationals?
Yes, everything is rational. Sorry, I should have said over the rationals. Okay. So to be clear, what is the freely algebra on a certain alphabet T? It's the collection of formal linear combinations or formal brackets of elements of the alphabet T modulo anti-symmetry in the Jacobi relation, and then it's in itself it's a Lie algebra with an obvious bracket. I mean, each of these is a tree, and you just sort of combine the two trees if you want to take a bracket. So what is M1/2 of the tails are U and V and the heads are X and Y? So it's the collection of all lambdas, where lambda is a sequence indexed by X and Y. So X goes to an element of the freely algebra, Y goes to an element of the freely algebra. An element of the freely algebra could be, for example, the bracket of U and V, so I draw it as a tree, and hence the tree is in the title of my talk, and I draw it as a tree with tails, with heads, X, and directed tree with heads, X, and tails, U and V, and hence that name. Okay? And likewise, Y could be going to the 3V minus 22 over 7, the bracket of U with the bracket of U and V. Okay? And of course, that's just the sample elements. The M1/2 is the set of all such things. Okay? Now, I have to tell you about operations. So, when would be a good time to take a break? We said there will be a break in the middle. I could either go for another 15 minutes, not generalize, or take the break now. Which one is better?
I would suggest to continue for 15 minutes and then have a break. Would it be the end of the generalized algebra? 15 minutes or not yet?
It will more or less be.
Okay, I think that's a good idea. Then we have a break.
The algebra should go faster because...
Well, we'll see.
Algebra is easy. Okay. There is an operation called tail multiply, as before. And again, it's a unary operation. It takes lambda to a different sequence. Okay? And what it does is, it takes lambda, and everywhere there is a u or a v in lambda, it renames it w. So now instead of being in the freely algebra in which there are generators u and v, everything is in the freely algebra in which these two generators got replaced by w. Okay, so the set of tails got replaced from a set that contains u and v to a set in which u and v were removed, and instead you have a w. Okay? It's obvious that this satisfies meta-associativity. So if you rename u and v u, and rename u and w u, then overall you've renamed u, v, and w u. Okay? And, the other thing does the same thing. Okay? Head multiply is, it's supposed to take a sequence of freely elements in which there is one freely element labeled X and another one labeled Y, and replace these two by a freely element labeled Z. So what it does is it takes the sequence lambda, it removes the elements labeled X and the element labeled Y from it, and it adds a new element to the sequence labeled Z, and whose value is the BCH product of the old value of X with the old value of Y. So of lambda at X with lambda at Y. Okay? Now what's the BCH product? The BCH product of two freely elements is the, log of the product of their exponentials, and it can be written as a power series using the Lie algebra operation, using the bracket. So it's alpha plus beta plus the bracket of alpha and beta divided by 2 plus blah 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 blah.
How is it in the first approximation? Can we use a sum instead? It's also associative, just instead of a BCH?
Yeah, you could use the sum, and you will still have meta-associativity, but the rest will break. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, now you can check that the BCH formula has a sort of associativity property written here, and it implies that there is a meta-associativity for the head multiply operation that I've defined, and it's the exact same blue axiom that I had before. Okay? And the most interesting, the next operation is the tail by head action. So a head X acting on a tail U. So what it is I take the sequence lambda, and I take all the freely elements in it and apply to them the operation repeated conjugation of U by lambda at X. Lambda at X is a freely element. Right? Lambda is a sequence, so lambda at X will be a freely element, and the operation I apply is repeated conjugation of U by lambda X, so I have to define what repeated conjugation is. So, first of all, given a generator U and a freely element gamma, conjugation of U by minus gamma is an operation from the freely algebra to the freely algebra, which is just the substitution. Every place you see a U, you replace it by U conjugated by E to the, this is conjugation by E to the gamma, I suppose. Okay? But this can be written theoretically. Conjugation by an exponential is the same as applying the exponential of the adjoint. So in fact, conjugation of U by minus gamma will map U to E to the minus the adjoint of gamma acting on U, which means U minus gamma bracket U plus 1 half gamma bracket U minus 1 over 6 gamma bracket U, and so on. Okay? Unfortunately, conjugation is not the operation that I want. The operation I need is repeated conjugation or reverse conjugation. which is simply the inverse of this operation. Now, here is something confusing. The inverse of conjugating u by minus gamma is not conjugating u by gamma.
Is it because there are some u's eventually in
gamma?
Gamma.
Mm-hmm. Right. The inverse of conjugating u by minus gamma, the naive thing would be that you just conjugate u by gamma. But the thing is, you know, even in group theory, the inverse of the map u goes to x inverse u x is not u goes to x u x inverse. And the reason is that x itself is an element of the free group, or in our case, x or gamma in itself is an element of the freely algebra. So, x itself will have u's in it. So, if you do this operation, and then the second operation will also act on the u's that appear in x. So, you won't go back to where you were, you will go back to where you were with the x's corrupted.
So, okay? Is groupoid the right word to use?
No.
Is
it?
But somehow you know that this exists by the inverse function theorem.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you could write it by iterating.
Yes, and in fact, what turns out to be the case, and hence the naming, is that RC, so the inverse of conjugation by minus gamma, is repeated conjugation of u by gamma. So what you do is you take your original word, you look for every u in it, conjugated by gamma. Now, these u's are now cancelled, but many new u's got created because inside gamma there are still many u's. So you conjugate each of these and cancel them.
That's exactly what the inverse function theorem.
Sorry, I'm not reinventing the wheel.
But
I will reinvent the wheel later, but this is not yet reinventing the wheel. Okay? So hence the naming, but it's sort of a bizarre fact. Okay. Anyway, here's a little claim. Conjugating u by the BCH product of alpha and beta, again, it's again, conjugating by a product is not the composition of the conjugations. For the same reason as before. So conjugation by the BCH product of alpha and beta becomes conjugating u by alpha, in which you first unconjugate every u by a beta, and then you conjugate by beta. So the conjugation by beta will undo the way you fixed up alpha. Okay? Here's a property, okay? And then you reverse this property, you invert both sides, and you find that RC of u by the BCH product is a certain composition of RCs. And when you look at it, this is precisely the other blue axiom. So head multiply, meaning doing BCH, followed by action, is the same as action followed by another action, followed by head multiply. And likewise, and I will not give you details, tail multiply followed by conjugation is the same as conjugating u, then conjugating v, and then identifying u and v into w. Okay? So the moral is that three red operations that I've defined, tail multiply, meaning identify u and v into w, head multiply, meaning the BCH product, and tail by head action, meaning this silly repeated conjugation, satisfy the same blue axioms as before. Okay? Now, I could stop here. I could say, okay, I can construct an invariant, and I can construct an invariant of topology into algebra, where this is the algebra, okay? And the result would be somewhat disappointing. This is a rewording of the so-called Milner invariants. This is complete repetition of Milner invariants. But then there is more, and here's the point where I reinvent the wheel. No, I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm actually stealing everything from the fellow picture here. Okay. So let me tell you a little bit about wheels. This is the other half of the work. So the full target space with tails T and heads H is the half target space product cyclic words in the alphabet T. What is cyclic words in the alphabet T? It's the vector space of cyclic words, which just means words in the alphabet U, V, whatever, which are drawn along a circle instead of along a line. Okay? You know, here's a better picture. If you think of these letters as colors, then here are two cyclic words in some set of colors. Okay? And I should add that equally well, I could have been talking, instead of about cyclic words in the alphabet T, I could have been talking about cyclic words in the freely algebra over T. So, in other words, if you have a cycle of trees, it reduces to a cycle of ordinary letters. So the trick is, well, if you have a cycle and somewhere you have a tree of it instead of an ordinary letter, you replace that tree, you basically replace the first branch in it, you interpret it as a bracket. So you replace this branch with U times V minus V times U. Okay? And I think this minus sign here is a bug. It shouldn't be here. Oh, it should have been here. Okay, you don't touch all the other ends. Okay? So in particular, anything that acts on the freely algebra will also act on C-dub, on cyclic words. So if something acts on the freely algebra by replacing a letter U by some combination of trees, well, it will also act on cyclic words by replacing U by a combination of trees, and then you can expand them to cyclic words. Okay? So, the bigger target space is the same as before, sequences of trees, with yet an additional element, which is a cyclic word. Okay? But now I have to extend the operations. So, tail multiply is the same. So, every place you see a U or a V, replace it by a W. Head multiply is the same. Every place you see an X or a Y, replace it by a Z. Sorry. No. Head multiply is the same, you just don't touch the cyclic word. So, you apply the BCH product of the X part with the Y part and call the result Z. Tail by head action, well, was defined by acting on lambda by repeated conjugation. So instead, you act on lambda on a pair, lambda comma omega, where omega is the cyclic words. You act on this pair by repeated conjugation, but you add a little spice. I didn't have to add the spice. If I didn't add the spice, I would simply get a less interesting theory. But you could add spice. And I have to describe what the spice is, and now I've spoken for an hour. So is it a good time to stop? Okay, so I'll talk about the spice later. And in fact, I'm not very far from the end. Of the top, and then we could do the meta top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.